I love this idea of
Blog Talk Radio.
Do you think they're really ready for you now? Do you think that there'll be many of you now? Do you really think they're ready for you now? Do you think they're really ready for you now? Do you think that there'll be many of you now? Do you really think they're ready for you now? Thinking, Chris, shrinking. Nah, I just don't brag about the deals I've been inking. Honorary degrees from Lincoln. I cross borders like Mohicans and do albums in a weekend. I'm hip hop speaking, never the weakling. I'm the truth, man, so what are y'all seeking? Them lies and them liars, I still make flyers. I still ride bands and say MC to hire. I'll spit the fire anywhere, any place. Mama never told you to stay out of grown folk face. Then you got them rappers with that cold broke face. They toured around the world, then they going no place. My KRS One moves at his own pace. On vegetable oil, no gas, no waste. Then you got these intellectuals, really they're sexual, but they wanna remain respectable. Stop fronting.
Do you think
they're really ready for you now? Do you think that there'll be many of you now? Do you really think they're ready for you now? Do you think they're really ready for you now? Do you think that there'll be many of you now? Do you really think they're ready?
By more people working, getting higher pay, paying more taxes.
Sorry for that, people. We got cut off by the network, Jimmy's Underground Radio, and we'll be right back with the debate. Thank you for listening.
You'll never get there. You never balance the budget by raising taxes. Spain spends 42% of their total economy on government.
Okay.
We're now spending 42% of our economy on government. I don't want to go down the path to Spain. I want to go down the path of growth that puts Americans to work with more money coming in because they're working.
But Mr. President, you're saying in order to get it the job done, it's got to be balanced.
If we're serious, we've got to take a balanced, responsible approach. And by the way, this is not just when it comes to individual taxes. Let's talk about corporate taxes. Now, I've identified areas where we can right away make a change that I believe would actually help the economy. The oil industry gets $4 billion a year in corporate welfare. Basically, they get deductions that those small businesses that Governor Romney refers to, they don't get. Now, does anybody think that ExxonMobil needs some extra money when they're making money every time you go to the pump? Why wouldn't we want to eliminate that? Why wouldn't we eliminate tax breaks for corporate jets? My attitude is if you got a corporate jet, you can probably afford to pay full freight, not get a special break for it. When it comes to corporate taxes, Governor Romney has said he wants to, in a revenue-neutral way, close loopholes, deductions. He hasn't identified which ones they are, but that thereby bring down the corporate rate. Well, I want to do the same thing, but I've actually identified how we can do that. And part of the way to do it is to not give tax breaks to companies that are shipping jobs overseas. Right now, you can actually take a deduction for moving a plant overseas. I think most Americans would say that doesn't make sense, and all that raises revenue. And so if we take a balanced approach, what that then allows us to do is also to help young people, the way we already have during my administration, make sure that they can afford to go to college. It means that the teacher that I met in Las Vegas, a wonderful young lady, who describes to me she's got 42 kids in her class. The first 2 weeks, she's got them, some of them sitting on the floor until finally they get reassigned. They're using textbooks that are 10 years old. That is not a recipe for growth. That's not how America was built. And so budgets reflect choices. Ultimately, we're going to have to make some decisions. And if we're asking for no revenue, then that means that we've got to get rid of a whole bunch of stuff. And the magnitude of the tax cuts that you're talking about, Governor, would end up resulting in severe hardship for people, but more importantly, would not help us grow. As I indicated before, when you talk about shifting Medicaid to states, we're talking about potentially a 30% cut in Medicaid over time. Now, you know, that may not seem like a big deal when it just is paper, numbers on a sheet of paper. But if we're talking about a family who's got an autistic kid and is depending on that Medicaid, That's a big problem. And governors are creative. There's no doubt about it. But they're not creative enough to make up for 30% of revenue on something like Medicaid. What ends up happening is some people end up not getting help.
Jim, we've gone on a lot of topics there, and so it's going to take a minute to go from Medicaid to schools
to Medicaid.
Oil to tax breaks and companies going overseas. So let's go through them one by one. First of all, the Department of Energy has said the tax break for oil companies is $2.8 billion a year, and it's actually an accounting treatment, as you know, that's been in place for 100 years. Now,
it's time to end it.
And in 1 year, you provided $90 billion in breaks to the green energy world. Now, I like green energy as well, but that's about 50 years' worth of what oil and gas receives. And you say Exxon and Mobil. Actually, this $2.8 billion goes largely to small companies, to drilling operators and so forth. But, you know, if we get that tax rate from 35% down to 25%, why, that $2.8 billion is on the table. Of course it's on the table. That's probably not going to survive if you get that rate down to 25%. But don't forget, you put $90 billion, like 50 years' worth of breaks into solar and wind, to Solyndra and Fisker and Tesla and Enter1. I mean, I had a friend who said you don't just pick the winners and losers, you pick the losers. All right. So this is not the kind of policy you want to have. You want to get America energy secure. The second topic, which is, you said you get a deduction for taking a plant overseas. Look, I've been in business for 25 years. I have no idea what you're talking about. I maybe need to get a new accountant. But the idea that you get a break for shipping jobs overseas is simply not the case. What we do have right now is a setting where I'd like to bring money from overseas back to this country. And finally, Medicaid to states, I'm not quite sure where that came in except this, which is, I would like to take Medicaid dollars to go to states and say to a state, you're going to get what you got last year, plus inflation, plus 1%. And then you're going to manage your care for your poor in the way you think best. And I remember as a governor, when this idea was floated by Tommy Thompson, the governors, Republican and Democrats, said, please let us do that. We can care for our own poor in so much better and more effective a way than having the federal government tell us how to care for our poor. So let's state, one of the magnificent things about this country is the whole idea that states are the laboratories of democracy. Don't have the federal government tell everybody what kind of training programs they have to have and what kind of Medicaid they have to have. Let states do this. And by the way, if a state gets in trouble, well, we can step in and see if we can find a way to help them. But the right approach is one which relies on the brilliance of our people and states, not the federal government.
2 seconds, and we're going on still on the economy on another, but another part of it. All right. All right. This is segment three, the economy. Entitlements. First answer goes to you, 2 minutes, Mr. President. Do you see a major difference between the two of you on Social Security?
You know, I suspect that on Social Security we've got a somewhat similar position. Social Security is structurally sound. It's going to have to be tweaked the way it was by Ronald Reagan and Democratic Speaker Tip O'Neill. The basic structure is sound, but I want to talk about the values behind Social Security and Medicare, and then talk about Medicare, because that's the big driver of our deficits right now. You know, my grandmother, some of you know, helped to raise me. My grandparents did. My grandfather died a while back. My grandmother died 3 days before I was elected president, and she was fiercely independent. She worked her way up. Only had a high school education, started as a secretary, ended up being the vice president of a local bank. And she ended up living alone by choice. And the reason she could be independent was because of Social Security and Medicare. She had worked all her life, put in this money, and understood that there was a basic guarantee, a floor under which she could not go. And that's the perspective I bring when I think about what's called entitlements. The name itself implies some sense of dependency on the part of these folks. These are folks who've worked hard, like my grandmother, and there are millions of people out there who are counting on this. So my approach is to say, how do we strengthen the system over the long term? And in Medicare, what we did was we said, we are going to have to bring down the costs if we're going to deal with our long-term deficits. But to do that, let's look where some of the money is going. $716 billion we were able to save from the Medicare program by no longer overpaying insurance companies, by making sure that we weren't overpaying providers, And using that money, we were actually able to lower prescription drug costs for seniors by an average of $600. And we were also able to make a significant dent in providing them the kind of preventive care that will ultimately save money throughout the system. So the way for us to deal with Medicare in particular is to lower health care costs. When it comes to Social Security, as I said, you don't need a major structural change in order to make sure that Social Security is there for the future.
We'll follow up on this. First, Governor Romney, you have 2 minutes on Social Security and entitlements.
Well, Jim, our seniors depend on these programs, and I know any time we talk about entitlements, people become concerned that something's going to happen that's going to change their life for the worst. And the answer is neither the president nor I are proposing any changes for any current retirees or near retirees, either to Social Security or Medicare. So if you're 60 or around 60 or older, you don't need to listen any further. But for younger people, we need to talk about what changes are going to be occurring. Oh, I just thought about one. And that is, in fact, I was wrong when I said the president isn't proposing any changes for current retirees. In fact, he is on Medicare, and Social Security is not. But on Medicare, for current retirees, he's cutting $716 billion from the program. Now, he says by not overpaying hospitals and providers, actually just going to them and saying we're going to reduce the rates you get paid across the board. Everybody's going to get a lower rate. That's not just going after places where there's abuse. That's saying we're cutting the rates. Some 15% of hospitals and nursing homes say they won't take any more Medicare patients under that scenario. We also have 50% of doctors who say they won't take more Medicare patients. We have 4 million people on Medicare Advantage that will lose Medicare Advantage because of those $716 billion in cuts. I can't understand how you can cut Medicare $716 billion for current recipients of Medicare. Now, you point out, well, we're putting some back. We're going to give them a better prescription program. That's $1 for every 15 you've cut. They're smart enough to know that's not a good trade. I want to take that $716 billion you've cut and put it back into Medicare. By the way, we can include a prescription program if we need to improve it. But the idea of cutting $716 billion from Medicare to be able to balance the additional cost of Obamacare is, in my opinion, a mistake. And with regards to young people coming along, I've got proposals to make sure Medicare and Social Security are there for them without any question.
Mr. President.
First of all, I think it's important for Governor Romney to present this plan that he says will only affect folks in the future. And the essence of the plan is that he would turn Medicare into a voucher program. It's called premium support, but it's understood to be a voucher program.
And you don't support that?
I don't, and let me explain why.
Again, that's for future people, right? Not for current retirees.
So if you're 54 or 55, you might want to listen, because this will affect you. The idea, which was originally presented by Congressman Ryan, your running mate, is that we would give a voucher to seniors, and they could go out in the private marketplace.
Jim of the Underground Radio Network, broadcasting the 2012 presidential debates with Governor Mitt Romney and President Barack Obama. We're broadcasting this live from ABCLogo.go.com. So thank you for listening. And we're going to have a discussion following the debates. So call in to 347-838-9825 to discuss the debates. We'll be back after this break. Or we will just keep talking about debates until we get it together. A little technical difficulties here.
Wouldn't you just like to feel clean again? In Chicago and surrounding areas, Unique Towel Cleaning Service is the best cleaning service. We do basic cleaning and super cleaning, offices and apartment buildings. We will even clean your barber shop, your beauty shop, your spa or restaurant's towels and aprons. Call Unique Towel Cleaning Service at 77-
is for basic checkup. checkups that can keep them healthier. And the primary beneficiary of that repeal are insurance companies that are estimated to gain billions of dollars back when they aren't making seniors any healthier. And I don't think that's the right approach when it comes to making sure that Medicare is stronger over the long term.
We'll talk about specifically about health care in a moment, but do you support the voucher system, Governor?
What I support is no change for current retirees and near retirees to Medicare. And the president supports taking $716 billion out of that program.
What about the voucher?
So that's number one.
Okay.
Number two is for people coming along that are young. What I do to make sure that we can keep Medicare in place for them is to allow them to either to choose the current Medicare program or a private plan, their choice. They get to choose, and they'll have at least two plans that will be entirely at no cost to them. So they don't have to pay additional money, no additional $6,000. That's not going to happen. They'll have at least two plans. And by the way, if the government can be as efficient as the private sector and offer premiums that are as low as the private sector, people will be happy to get traditional Medicare, or they'll be able to get a private plan. I know my own view is I'd rather have a private plan. I just assume not have the government telling me what kind of health care I get. I'd rather be able to have an insurance company. If I don't like them, I can get rid of them and find a different insurance company. But people make their own choice. The other thing we have to do to save Medicare, we have to have the benefits high for those that are low income, but for higher income people, we're going to have to lower some of the benefits. We have to make sure this program is there for the long term. That's the plan that I put forward. By the way, the idea came not even from Paul Ryan or Senator Wyden, who's a co-author of the bill with Paul Ryan in the Senate, but also it came from Bill Clinton's chief of staff. This is an idea that's been around a long time, which is saying, hey, let's see if we can't get competition into the Medicare world so that people can get the choice of different plans at lower cost, better quality, I believe, in competition.
Jim, if I can just respond very quickly. First of all, every study has shown that Medicare has lower administrative costs than private insurance does, which is why seniors are generally pretty happy with it. And private insurers have to make a profit. Nothing wrong with that. That's what they do. And so you've got higher administrative costs plus profit on top of that. And if you are going to save any money through what Governor Romney is proposing,
when you move to a voucher system, you are putting seniors at the mercy of those insurance companies. And over time, if traditional Medicare has decayed or fallen apart, then they're stuck. And this is the reason why AARP has said that your plan would weaken Medicare substantially. And that's why they were supportive of the approach that we took. One last point I want to make. We do have to lower the cost of health care, not just in Medicare and Medicaid.
Talk about that in a minute.
But overall.
Oh, okay.
And so...
That's a big topic. Can we get Medicare?
I want to get to it. But all I want to do is put very quickly...
Let's get back to Medicare. The government can provide the service at lower cost and without a profit.
All right.
If that's the case, then it will always be the best product that people can purchase. But my experience is the private sector typically is able to provide a better product at a lower cost.
Can the two of you agree that the voters have a choice, a clear choice between
Absolutely.
The two of you on Medicare?
Absolutely.
All right. So to finish quickly, briefly on the economy, what is your view about the level of federal regulation of the economy right now? Is there too much? And in your case, Mr. President, should there be more? Beginning with you, this is not a new 2-minute segment. Just start, and we'll go for a few minutes, and then we're going to go to health care, okay?
Regulation is essential. You can't have a free market work if you don't have regulation. As a business person, I had to have I needed to know the regulations. I needed them there. You couldn't have people opening up banks in their garage and making loans. I mean, you have to have regulations so that you can have an economy work. Every free economy has good regulation. At the same time, regulation can become excessive.
Is it excessive now?
Well, in some places, yes.
Like
other places,
me,
no. It can become out of date. And what's happened with some of the legislation that's been passed during the president's term, you've seen regulation become excessive, and it's hurt the economy. Let me give you an example. Dodd-Frank was passed, and it includes within it a number of provisions that I think has some unintended consequences that are harmful to the economy. One is it designates a number of banks as too big to fail, and they're effectively guaranteed by the federal government. This is the biggest kiss that's been given to New York banks I've ever seen. This is an enormous boon for them. There have been 122 community and small banks have closed since Dodd-Frank. So there's one example. Here's another. In Dodd-Frank, it says...
You want to repeal Dodd-Frank?
Well, I would repeal that and replace it. We're not going to get rid of all regulation. You have to have regulation.
Okay.
And there's some parts of Dodd-Frank that make all the sense in the world. You need transparency. You need to have leverage limits for institutions.
Well, there's a specific.
Let me mention the other one. Let's talk the big
well,
one.
No, let's not.
Okay.
Let's let him respond. Let him respond to this specific on Dodd-Frank and what the governor just said.
Well, I think this is a great example. The reason we have been in such a enormous economic crisis was prompted by reckless behavior across the board. Now, it wasn't just on Wall Street. You had loan officers that were given loans and mortgages that really shouldn't have been given because the folks didn't qualify. You had people who were borrowing money to buy a house that they couldn't afford. You had credit agencies that were stamping these as A1 great investments when they weren't. But you also had banks making money hand over fist, churning out products that the bankers themselves didn't even understand in order to make big profits, but knowing that it made the entire system vulnerable. So what did we do? We stepped in and had the toughest reforms on Wall Street since the 1930s. We said, you've got banks, you've got to raise your capital requirements. You can't engage in some of this risky behavior that is putting Main Street at risk. We're going to make sure that you've got to have a living will so we can know how you're going to wind things down if you make a bad bet so we don't have other taxpayer bailouts. In the meantime, by the way, we also made sure that all the help that we provided those banks was paid back every single dime with interest. Now, Governor Romney has said he wants to repeal Dodd-Frank. And, you know, I appreciate, and it appears we've got some agreement that a marketplace to work has to have some regulation. But in the past, Governor Romney has said he just wants to repeal Dodd-Frank, roll it back. And so the question is, does anybody out there think that the big problem we had is that there was too much oversight and regulation of Wall Street? Because if you do, then Governor Romney is your candidate. But that's not what I believe.
That's just not the facts. Look, we have to have regulation in Wall Street. That's why I'd have regulation. But I wouldn't designate five banks as too big to fail and give them a blank check. That's one of the unintended consequences of Dodd-Frank. It wasn't thought through properly. We need to get rid of that provision because it's killing regional and small banks. They're getting hurt. Let me mention another regulation in Dodd-Frank. You say we were giving mortgages to people who weren't qualified. That's exactly right. It's one of the reasons for the great financial calamity we had. And so Dodd-Frank correctly says we need to have qualified mortgages, and if you give a mortgage that's not qualified, there are big penalties, except they didn't ever go on to define what a qualified mortgage was.
All right.
It's been 2 years. We don't know what a qualified mortgage is yet. So banks are reluctant to make loans, mortgages. Try and get a mortgage these days. It's hurt the housing market because Dodd-Frank didn't anticipate putting in place the kinds of regulations you have to have. It's not that Dodd-Frank always was wrong with too much regulation. Sometimes they didn't come out with the clear regulation. I will make sure we don't hurt the functioning of our marketplace and our businesses because I want to bring back housing and get good jobs.
All right. I think we have another clear difference between the two of you. Now let's move to health care, where I know there is a clear difference, and that has to do with the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, and it's a two-minute new segment, and that means 2 minutes each, and you go first, Governor Romney. You want it repealed. You want the Affordable Care Act repealed. Why?
I sure do. Well, in part, it comes again from my experience. I was in New Hampshire. A woman came to me, and she said, look, I can't afford insurance for myself or my son. I met a couple in Appleton, Wisconsin, and they said, we're thinking of dropping our insurance. We can't afford it. And the number of small businesses I've gone to that are saying they're dropping insurance because they can't afford it, the cost of health care is just prohibitive, and we've got to deal with cost. And unfortunately, when you look at Obamacare, the Congressional Budget Office has said it will cost $2,500 a year more than traditional insurance. So it's adding to cost. And as a matter of fact, when the president ran for office, he said, that by this year he would have brought down the cost of insurance for each family by $2,500 a family. Instead, it's gone up by that amount. So it's expensive. Expensive things hurt families. So that's one reason I don't want it. Second reason, it cuts $716 billion from Medicare to pay for it. I want to put that money back in Medicare for our seniors. Number three, it puts in place an unelected board that's going to tell people ultimately what kind of treatment they're going to have. I don't like that idea. Fourth, there was a survey done of small businesses across the country. It said, what's been the effect of Obamacare on your hiring plans? And three-quarters of them said it makes us less likely to hire people. I just don't know how the president could have come into office facing 23 million people out of work, rising unemployment, an economic crisis at the kitchen table, and spent his energy and passion for 2 years fighting for Obamacare instead of fighting for jobs for the American people. It has killed jobs. And the best course for health care is to do what we did in my state, craft a plan at the state level that fits the needs of the state. And then let's focus on getting the cost down for people rather than raising it with the $2,500 additional premium.
Mr. President, the argument against repeal.
Well, 4 years ago when I was running for office, I was traveling around and having those same conversations that Governor Romney talks about. And it wasn't just that small businesses were seeing costs skyrocket and they couldn't get affordable coverage even if they wanted to provide it to their employees. It wasn't just that this was the biggest driver of our federal deficit, our overall health care costs, but it was families who were worried about going bankrupt if they got sick. Millions of families all across the country. They had a pre-existing condition. They might not be able to get coverage at all. If they did have coverage, insurance companies might impose an arbitrary limit. And so as a consequence, they're paying their premiums. Somebody gets really sick. Lo and behold, they don't have enough money to pay the bills because the insurance companies say that they've hit the limit. So we did work on this alongside working on jobs because this is part of making sure that middle-class families are secure in this country. And let me tell you exactly what Obamacare did. Number one, if you've got health insurance, it doesn't mean a government takeover. You keep your own insurance. You keep your own doctor. But it does say insurance companies can't jerk you around. They can't impose arbitrary lifetime limits. They have to let you keep your kid on their insurance, your insurance plan until you're 26 years old. And it also says that you're going to have to get rebates if insurance companies are spending more on administrative costs and profits than they are on actual care. Number two, if you don't have health insurance, we're essentially setting up a group plan that allows you to benefit from group rates that are typically 18% lower than if you're out there trying to get insurance on the individual market. Now, the last point I'd make before...
Two minutes is up, sir.
No, I think I had 5 seconds before you interrupted me, was... the irony is that we've seen this model work really well in Massachusetts because... Governor Romney did a good thing working with Democrats in the state to set up what is essentially the identical model, and as a consequence, people are covered there. It hasn't destroyed jobs, and as a consequence, we now have a system in which we have the opportunity to start bringing down costs as opposed to just leaving millions of people out in the cold.
Your 5 seconds went away a long time ago. All right, Governor. Governor, tell the president directly why you think what he just said is wrong about Obama.
Well, I did with my first statement, but I'll go on.
Please elaborate.
I'll elaborate. Exactly right. First of all, I like the way we did it in Massachusetts. I like the fact that in my state we had Republicans and Democrats come together and work together. What you did instead was to push through a plan without a single Republican vote. As a matter of fact, when Massachusetts did something quite extraordinary, elected a Republican senator to stop Obamacare, you pushed it through anyway. So entirely on a partisan basis, instead of bringing America together and having a discussion on this important topic, you pushed through something that you and Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid thought was the best answer and drove it through. What we did in a legislature, 87% Democrat, we worked together. 200 legislators in my legislature, only two voted against the plan by the time we were finished. What were some differences? We didn't raise taxes. You've raised them by $1 trillion under Obamacare. We didn't cut Medicare. Of course, we don't have Medicare, but we didn't cut Medicare by $716 billion. We didn't put in place a board that can tell people ultimately what treatments they're going to receive. We didn't also do something that I think a number of people across this country recognize, which is put people in a position where they're going to lose the insurance they had and they wanted. Right now, the CBO says up to 20 million people will lose their insurance as Obamacare goes into effect next year. And likewise, a study by McKinsey and Company of American businesses said 30% of them are anticipating dropping people from coverage. So for those reasons, for the tax, for Medicare, for this board, and for people losing their insurance, this is why the American people don't want Medicare, don't want Obamacare. It's why Republicans said, do not do this. And the Republicans had a plan. They put a plan out. They put out a plan, a bipartisan plan. It was swept aside. I think something this big, this important, has to be done on a bipartisan basis. And we have to have a president who can reach across the aisle and fashion important legislation with the input from both parties.
Governor Romney said this has to be done on a bipartisan basis. This is a bipartisan idea. In fact, it was a Republican idea. And Governor Romney, at the beginning of this debate, wrote and said what we did in Massachusetts could be a model for the nation. And I agree that the Democratic legislators in Massachusetts might have given some advice to Republicans in Congress about how to cooperate. But the fact of the matter is we use the same advisors, and they say it's the same plan. When Governor Romney talks about this board, for example, unelected board that we've created, what this is a group of healthcare experts, doctors, et cetera, to figure out how can we reduce the cost of care in the system overall. Because there are two ways of dealing with our healthcare crisis. One is to simply leave a whole bunch of people uninsured and let them fend for themselves, to let businesses figure out how long they can continue to pay premiums until finally they just give up and their workers are no longer getting insured. And that's been the trend line. Or alternatively, we can figure out how do we make the cost of care more effective. And there are ways of doing it. So at Cleveland Clinic, one of the best healthcare systems in the world, they actually provide great care cheaper than average. And the reason they do is because they do some smart things. They say if a patient's coming in, let's get all the doctors together at once, do one test instead of having the patient run around with 10 tests. Let's make sure that we're providing preventive care so we're catching the onset of something like diabetes. Let's pay providers on the basis of performance as opposed to on the basis of how many procedures they've engaged in. Now, so what this board does is basically identifies best practices and says, let's use the purchasing power of Medicare and Medicaid to help to institutionalize all these good things that we do. And the fact of the matter is that when Obamacare is fully implemented, we're going to be in a position to show that costs are going down. And over the last 2 years, healthcare premiums have gone up. It's true, but they've gone up slower than any time in the last 50 years. So we're already beginning to see progress. In the meantime, folks out there with insurance, you're already getting a rebate. Let me make one last point. Governor Romney says we should replace it. I'm just going to repeal it, but we can replace it with something. But the problem is he hasn't described what exactly we'd replace it with other than saying we're going to leave it to the states. But the fact of the matter is that some of the prescriptions that he's offered, like letting you buy insurance across state lines, there's no indication that that somehow is going to help somebody who's got a pre-existing condition be able to finally buy insurance. In fact, it's estimated that by repealing Obamacare, you're looking at 50 million people losing health insurance at a time when it's vitally important.
Let's let the governor explain what you would do if Obamacare is repealed. How would you replace it?
It's a lengthy description, but number one, pre-existing conditions are covered under my plan. Number two, young people are able to stay on their family plan. That's already offered in the private marketplace. You don't have to have the government mandate that for that to occur. But let's come back to something the President and I agree on, which is the key task we have in healthcare is to get the cost down so it's more affordable for families And then he has as a model for doing that a board of people at the government, an unelected board, appointed board, who are going to decide what kind of treatment you ought to have.
No,
in my opinion, the government is not effective in bringing down the cost of almost anything. As a matter of fact, free people and free enterprises trying to find ways to do things better are able to be more effective in bringing down the cost than the government will ever be. Your example of the Cleveland Clinic is my case in point, along with several others I could describe. This is the private market. These are enterprises competing with each other, learning how to do better and better jobs. I used to consult to to hospitals and to healthcare providers. I was astonished at the creativity and innovation that exists in the American people. In order to bring the cost of healthcare down, we don't need to have a board of 15 people telling us what kinds of treatments we should have. We instead need to put insurance plans, providers, hospitals, doctors on target such that they have an incentive, as you say, performance pay for doing an excellent job for keeping costs down, and that's happening. Intermountain Healthcare does it superbly well. Mayo Clinic is doing it superbly well. Cleveland Clinic, others. But the right answer is not to have the federal government take over healthcare and start mandating to the providers across America, telling a patient and a doctor what kind of treatment they can have. That's the wrong way to go. Private market and individual responsibility always work best.
Let me just point out, first of all, this board that we're talking about can't make decisions about what treatments are given. That's explicitly prohibited in the law. But let's go back to what Governor Romney indicated, that under his plan, he would be able to cover people with pre-existing conditions. Well, actually, Governor, that isn't what your plan does. What your plan does is to duplicate what's already the law, which says, you know, if you are out of health insurance for 3 months, then you can end up getting continuous coverage, and an insurance company can't deny you if it's been under 90 days. But that's already the law, and that doesn't help the millions of people out there with pre-existing conditions. There's a reason why Governor Romney set up the plan that he did in Massachusetts. It wasn't a government takeover of health care. It was the largest expansion of private insurance. But what it does say is that insurers, you've got to take everybody. Now, that also means that you've got more customers. But when Governor Romney says that he'll replace it with something, but can't detail how it will be, in fact, replaced. And the reason he set up the system he did in Massachusetts was because there isn't a better way of dealing with the pre-existing conditions problem. It just reminds me of, you know, he says that he's going to close deductions and loopholes for his tax plan. That's how it's going to be paid for, but we don't know the details. He says that he's going to replace Dodd-Frank, Wall Street reform, but we don't know exactly which ones. He won't tell us. He now says he's going to replace Obamacare and assure that all the good things that are in it are going to be in there and you don't have to worry. And at some point, I think the American people have to ask themselves, is the reason that Governor Romney is keeping all these plans to replace secret because they're too good? Is it because that somehow middle-class families are going to benefit too much from them? No, the reason is because when we reform Wall Street, when we tackle the problem of pre-existing conditions, then, you know, these are tough problems, and we've got to make choices. And the choices we've made have been ones that ultimately are benefiting middle-class families all across the country.
We're going to move to
I have to respond to that, which is my experience as a governor is if I come in and lay down a piece of legislation and say it's my way or the highway, I don't get a lot done. What I do is the same way that Tip O'Neill and Ronald Reagan worked together some years ago. When Ronald Reagan ran for office, he laid out the principles that he was going to foster. He said he was going to lower tax rates. He said he was going to broaden the base. You've said the same thing. You're going to simplify the tax code, broaden the base. Those are my principles. I want to bring down the tax burden on middle-income families. And I'm going to work together with Congress to say, okay, what are the various ways we could bring down deductions, for instance? One way, for instance, would be to have a single number. I make up a number, $25,000, $50,000. Anybody can have deductions up to that amount. And then that number disappears for high-income people. That's one way one could do it. One could follow Bowles Simpson as a model and take deduction by deduction and make differences that way. There are alternatives to accomplish the objective I have, which is to bring down rates, broaden the base, simplify the code, and create incentives for growth. And with regards to health care, you had remarkable details with regards to my pre-existing condition plan. You obviously studied up on my plan. In fact, I do have a plan that deals with people with pre-existing conditions. That's part of my health care plan. And what we did in Massachusetts is a model for the nation, state by state. And I said that at that time. The federal government taking over health care for the entire nation and whisking aside the 10th Amendment, which gives states the rights for these kinds of things, is not the course for America to have a stronger, more vibrant economy.
That is a terrific segue to our next segment, and is the role of government. And let's see, role of government, and it is, you are first on this, Mr. President. And the question is this: do you believe, both of you, but you had the first 2 minutes on this, Mr. President, do you believe there's a fundamental difference between the two of you as to how you view the mission of the federal government?
Well, I definitely think there are differences. The first role of the federal government is to keep the American people safe. That's its most basic function. And as commander-in-chief, that is something that I have worked on and thought about every single day that I've been in the Oval Office. But I also believe that government has the capacity, the federal government has the capacity, to help open up opportunity and create ladders of opportunity and create frameworks where the American people can succeed. Look, the genius of America is the free enterprise system and freedom and the fact that people can go out there and start a business, work on an idea, make their own decisions. But as Abraham Lincoln understood, there are also some things we do better together. So in the middle of the Civil War, Abraham Lincoln said, let's help to finance the Transcontinental Railroad. Let's start the National Academy of Sciences. Let's start land-grant colleges, because we want to give these gateways of opportunity for all Americans, because if all Americans are getting opportunity, we're all going to be better off. That doesn't restrict people's freedom. That enhances it. And so what I've tried to do as president is to apply those same principles. And when it comes to education, what I've said is we've got to reform schools that are not working. We use something called Race to the Top. It wasn't a top-down approach, Governor. What we've said is to states, we'll give you more money if you initiate reforms. And as a consequence, you had 46 states around the country who have made a real difference. But what I've also said is let's hire another 100,000 math and science teachers to make sure we maintain our technological lead and our people are skilled and able to succeed. And hard-pressed states right now can't all do that. In fact, we've seen layoffs of hundreds of thousands of teachers over the last several years, and Governor Romney doesn't think we need more teachers. I do, because I think that that is the kind of investment where the federal government can help. It can't do it all, but it can make a difference, and as a consequence, we'll have a better trained workforce, and that will create jobs because companies want to locate in places where we've got a skilled workforce.
2 minutes, Governor, on the role of government. Your view.
Well, first, I love great schools. Massachusetts, our schools are ranked number one of all 50 states, and the key to great schools, great teachers. So I reject the idea that I don't believe in great teachers or more teachers. Every school district, every state should make that decision on their own. The role of government. Look behind us. The Constitution and the Declaration of Independence. The role of government is to promote and protect the principles of those documents. First, life and liberty. We have a responsibility to protect the lives and liberties of our people, and that means a military second to none. I do not believe in cutting our military. I believe in maintaining the strength of America's military. Second, in that line that says we are endowed by our Creator with our rights, I believe we must maintain our commitment to religious tolerance and freedom in this country. That statement also says that we are endowed by our Creator with the right to pursue happiness as we choose. I interpret that as, one, making sure that those people who are less fortunate and can't care for themselves are cared by one another. We're a nation that believes that we're all children of the same God, and we care for those that have difficulties, those that are elderly and have problems and challenges, those that are disabled. We care for them, and we look for discovery and innovation, all these things desired out of the American heart to provide the pursuit of happiness for our citizens. But we also believe in maintaining for individuals the right to pursue their dreams and not to have the government substitute itself for the rights of free individuals. And what we're seeing right now is, in my view, a trickle-down government approach, which has government thinking it can do a better job than free people pursuing their dreams, and it's not working. And the proof of that is 23 million people out of work. The proof of that is one out of six people in poverty. The proof of that is we've gone from 32 million on food stamps to 47 million on food stamps. The proof of that is that 50% of college graduates this year can't find work. We know that the path we're taking is not working. It's time for a new path.
All right, let's go through some specifics in terms of how each of you views the role of government. Education. Does the federal government have a responsibility to improve the quality of public education in America?
Well, the primary responsibility for education is, of course, at the state and local level. But the federal government also can play a very important role. And I agree with Secretary Arne Duncan. It's some ideas he's put forward on Race to the Top, not all of them, but some of them I agree with and congratulate him for pursuing that. The federal government can get local and state schools to do a better job. My own view, by the way, is I've added to that. I happen to believe I want the kids that are getting federal dollars from IDEA or Title I, these are disabled kids or poor kids or lower-income kids, rather, I want them to be able to go to the school of their choice. So all federal funds, instead of going to the state or to the school district, I'd have go, if you will, follow the child and let the parent and the child decide where to send their student.
How do you see the federal government's responsibility to, as I say, to improve the quality of public education in this country?
Well, as I've indicated, I think that it has a significant role to play. Through our Race to the Top program, we've worked with Republican and Democratic governors to initiate major reforms, and they're having an impact right now.
Do you think you have a difference with your views and those of Governor Romney on about education?
This is where budgets matter, because budgets reflect choices. So when Governor Romney indicates that he wants to cut taxes and potentially benefit folks like me and him, and to pay for it, we're having to initiate significant cuts in federal support for education. That makes a difference. You know, his running mate, Congressman Ryan, put forward a budget that reflects many of the principles that Governor Romney's talked about. And it wasn't very detailed. This seems to be a trend, but what it did do is to, if you extrapolated how much money we're talking about, you'd look at cutting the education budget by up to 20%. When it comes to community colleges, we are seeing great work done out there all over the country, because we have the opportunity to train people for jobs that exist right now. And one of the things I suspect Governor Romney and I probably agree on is getting businesses to work with community colleges so that they're setting up their training programs.
Do you agree, Governor?
Let me just finish the point.
Oh, yeah. It's going very well in my state, by the way. Yeah.
Where they're partnering so that they're designing training programs, and people who are going through them know that there's a job waiting for them if they complete.
Okay.
That makes a big difference, but that requires some federal support. Let me just say one final example. When it comes to making college affordable, whether it's two-year or four-year, one of the things that I did as president was we were sending $60 billion to banks and lenders as middlemen for the student loan program, even though the loans were guaranteed. So there was no risk for the banks or the lenders, but they were taking billions out of the system. And we said, why not cut out the middleman? And as a consequence, what we've been able to do is to provide millions more students assistance, lower keep low interest rates on student loans. And this is an example of where our priorities make a difference. Governor Romney, I genuinely believe, cares about education. But when he tells a student that, you know, you should borrow money from your parents to go to college, you know, that indicates the degree to which there may not be as much of a focus on the fact that folks like myself, folks like Michelle, kids probably who attend University of Denver, just don't have that option. And for us to be able to make sure that they've got
that opportunity and they can walk through that door, that is vitally important, not just to those kids. It's how we're going to grow this economy over the long term.
We're running out of time, gentlemen. So I think you have a chance.
Yes, respond
to that.
Mr. President, you're entitled as a president to your own airplane and to your own house, but not to your own facts. All right? I'm not going to cut education funding. I don't have any plan to cut education funding and grants to go to people going to college. I'm planning on continuing to grow, so I'm not planning on making changes there. But you make a very good point, which is that the place you put your money just makes a pretty clear indication of where your heart is. You put $90 billion into green jobs. And I look, I'm all in favor of green energy. $90 billion. That would have hired 2 million teachers. $90 billion. And these businesses, many of them have gone out of business. I think about half of them, of the ones that have been invested in, have gone out of business. A number of them happen to be owned by people who are contributors to your campaigns. Look, the right course for America's government, we're talking about the role of government, is not to become the economic player, picking winners and losers, telling people what kind of health treatment they can receive, taking over the health care system that has existed in this country for a long, long time and has produced the best health records in the world. The right answer for government is to say, how do we make the private sector become more efficient and more effective? How do we get schools to be more competitive? Let's grade them. I propose we grade our schools so parents know which schools are succeeding and failing, so they can take their child to a school that's being more successful. I don't want to cut our commitment to education. I wanted to make it more effective and efficient. And by the way, I've had that experience. I don't just talk about it. I've been there. Massachusetts schools are ranked number one in the nation. This is not because I didn't have commitment to education. It's because I care about education for all of our kids.
All right, gentlemen, look, excuse me one sec. Look, excuse me, sir. We've got barely have 3 minutes left. I'm not going to grade the two of you and say your answers have been too long or I've done a poor job.
You've done a great job.
Oh, well, no. But the fact is, the role of government and governing, We've lost a pod, in other words. So we only have three minutes left in the debate before we go to your closing statements. And so I want to ask finally here, and remember, we got 3 minutes total time here. And the question is this: many of the legislative functions of the federal government right now are in a state of paralysis as a result of partisan gridlock. If elected, in your case, if reelected in your case, what would you do about that? Governor?
Jim, I had the great experience, it didn't seem like it at the time, of being elected in a state where my legislature was 87% Democrat. And that meant I figured out from day one I had to get along, and I had to work across the aisle to get anything done. We drove our schools to be number one in the nation. We cut taxes 19 times.
What would you do as president?
As president, I will sit down on day one, actually the day after I get elected, I'll sit down with leaders, the Democratic leaders, as well as Republican leaders, and continue, as we did in my state. We met every Monday for a couple hours, talked about the issues and the challenges in our state in that case. We have to work on a collaborative basis, not because we're going to compromise our principle, but because there's common ground and the challenges America faces right now. Look, the reason I'm in this race is there are people that are really hurting today in this country, and we face this deficit could crush the future generations. What's happening in the Middle East? There are developments around the world that are of real concern. And Republicans and Democrats both love America. But we need to have leadership in Washington that will actually bring people together and get the job done, and could not care less if it's a Republican or a Democrat. I've done it before. I'll do it again.
Mr. President.
Well, first of all, I think Governor Romney is going to have a busy first day because he's also going to repeal Obamacare, which will not be very popular among Democrats as you're sitting down with them. But, look, my philosophy has been I will take ideas from anybody, Democrat or Republican, as long as they're advancing the cause of making middle-class families stronger and giving ladders of opportunity to the middle class. That's how we cut taxes for middle-class families and small businesses. That's how we cut $1 trillion of spending that wasn't advancing that cause. That's how we signed 3 trade deals into law that are helping us to double our exports and sell more American products around the world. That's how we repealed Don't Ask, Don't Tell. That's how we ended the war in Iraq, as I promised, and that's how we're going to wind down the war in Afghanistan. That's how we went after Al-Qaeda and bin Laden. So we've seen progress even under Republican control of the House of Representatives. But ultimately, part of being principled, part of being a leader is, A, being able to describe exactly what it is that you intend to do, not just saying, I'll sit down, but you have to have a plan. Number two, what's important is occasionally you've got to say no to folks both in your own party and in the other party. And, you know, yes, have we had some fights between me and the Republicans when they fought back against us reining in the excesses of Wall Street? Absolutely, because that was a fight that needed to be had. When we were fighting about whether or not we were going to make sure that Americans had more security with their health insurance, and they said, no, yes, that was a fight that we needed to have. And so part of leadership and governing is both saying what it is that you are for, but also being willing to say no to some things. And I've got to tell you, Governor Romney, when it comes to his own party during the course of this campaign, has not displayed that willingness to say no to some of the more extreme parts of his party.
That brings us to closing statements. There's a coin toss. Governor Romney, you won the toss, and you elected to go last, so you have a closing 2 minutes, Mr. President.
Well, Jim, I want to thank you, and I want to thank Governor Romney, because I think this was a terrific debate, and I very much appreciate it. And I want to thank the University of Denver. You know, 4 years ago, we were going through a major crisis, and yet my faith and confidence in the American future is undiminished. And the reason is because of its people. Because the woman I met in North Carolina who decided at 55 to go back to school because she wanted to inspire her daughter and now has a job from that new training that she's gotten. Because a company in Minnesota who was willing to give up salaries and perks for their executives to make sure that they didn't lay off workers during a recession. The auto workers that you meet in Toledo or Detroit take such pride in building the best cars in the world, not just because of paycheck, but because it gives them that sense of pride that they're helping to build America. And so the question now is, how do we build on those strengths? And everything that I've tried to do, and everything that I'm now proposing for the next 4 years in terms of improving our education system or developing American energy or making sure that we're closing loopholes for companies that are shipping jobs overseas and focusing on small business companies that are creating jobs here in the United States, or closing our deficit in a responsible, balanced way that allows us to invest in our future. All those things are designed to make sure that the American people, their genius, their grit, their determination is channeled and they have an opportunity to succeed, and everybody's getting a fair shot, and everybody's getting a fair share. Everybody's doing a fair share, and everybody's playing by the same rules. You know, 4 years ago, I said that I'm not a perfect man and I wouldn't be a perfect president, and that's probably a promise that Governor Romney thinks I've kept. But I also promised that I'd fight every single day on behalf of the American people, the middle class, and all those who are striving to get in the middle class. I've kept that promise, and if you'll vote for me, then I promise I'll fight just as hard in a second term.
Governor Romney, your 2 minutes close.
Thank you, Jim. And Mr. President, thank you for tuning in this evening. This is an important election, and I'm concerned about America. I'm concerned about the direction America has been taking over the last 4 years. I know this is bigger than an election about the two of us as individuals. It's bigger than our respective parties. It's an election about the course of America. What kind of America do you want to have for yourself and for your children? And there really are two very different paths that we began speaking about this evening. And over the course of this month, we're going to have two more presidential debates and a vice presidential debate. We'll talk about those two paths, but they lead in very different directions. And it's not just looking to our words that you have to take an evidence of where they go. You can look at the record. There's no question in my mind that if the president were to be reelected, you'll continue to see a middle-class squeeze, with incomes going down and prices going up. I'll get incomes up again. You'll see chronic unemployment. We've had 43 straight months with unemployment above 8%. If I'm president, I will help create 12 million new jobs in this country with rising incomes. The president's reelected, Obamacare will be fully installed. In my view, that's going to mean a whole different way of life for people who counted on the insurance plan they had in the past. Many will lose it. You're going to see health premiums go up by some $2,500 per family. If I'm elected, we won't have Obamacare. We'll put in place the kind of principles that I've put in place in my own state, and allow each state to craft their own programs to get people insured, and we'll focus on getting the cost of health care down. If the president were to be reelected, you're going to see a $716 billion cut to Medicare. You'll have 4 million people who will lose Medicare Advantage. You'll have hospitals and providers that will no longer accept Medicare patients. I'll restore that $716 billion to Medicare. And finally, military. The president's reelected, you'll see dramatic cuts to our military. The Secretary of Defense has said these would be even devastating. I will not cut our commitment to our military. I will keep America strong and get America's middle class working again. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you, Governor. Thank you, Mr. President. The next debate will be the vice presidential event on Thursday, October 11th at Center College in Danville, Kentucky. For now, from the University of Denver, I'm Jim Lara. Thank you and good night.
The conclusion of the first...
Gonna take you back in the timeline. Number one hit, Brick. Cool. Check it out.
Brick. A little something for the people. Brick. I think y'all should listen.
And talk about the victim last night that got popped. And who the best on the block with the crack rock? Play a lot of pocket banging till the track stop. It's in our nature to run into this jackpot. Hoping not to strike the blow for that rah-rah. But you envision that trip that's living my ties. The anticipation turns to aggravation. So when words of wisdom spoke, you hear blah blah. Cause if that wise guy turns to a wise guy, I pray to God that that guy ain't on a high rise. And if he is, I hope the earth he got nine lives. See, this is the type of life I seen with my eyes.
Ghost boys whipping in the ghost fire. On the 9 to 5, but no bow ties. Cause when Jay's on the street, you're solo, no lie. All black attire, shooting with a bow tie.
A time comes when silence is betrayal. Even when pressed by the demands of inner truth, men do not easily assume the task of opposing their government's policy, especially in time of war.
And watch a nigga kill another nigga. So one dead, one in jail, so soon there'll be no niggas. They scamming for the dough, nigga. I can't trust them, I don't know them. Them yo niggas, I need the source, they either leave or buy. Cause these niggas don't care if I breathe or die. So put your pride aside and let your wings fly. Don't be a middleman, be the man who supplies. The definition of a boss, let it multiply. And if they oppose that, they all can die. Cause if they move fast, that's when them cautions fly. So I'd rather be alive than a homicide. Feel my spirit, see my girl and my mama cry. And all my niggas pouring liquor for the honor. I vow to be the realest without ever saying it. So serious, I ain't kidding, nigga, who you playing with?
Where
are
ranked on this earth to be a man, to be a human being, to be respected as a human being, to be given the rights of a human being in this society, on this earth, in this day, which we intend to bring into existence by any means necessary.
Fucking the same chick your man had last week. Now he's emotional, so now you got beef. Instead of him checking out who the hoe be, next thing you know, he let go free. To the chest. Now we gotta lay another brother down to rest. That wall getting full, cause y'all full of the bull. No more love or lust, cause all they do now is cool. 15 years old, not even in school. But he know mathematics better than you. A community that knows everything about you. But when it goes down, they don't know what to do. What type of sense is that? No clue. So instead of waiting for them, you make the first move. Instead of talk about the victim last night that got popped, or who the best on the block with the crack rock.
If there is anyone out there who still doubts that America is a place where all things are possible, who still wonders if the dream of our founders is alive in our time, still question the power of our democracy, tonight is your answer.
Jimmy Underground Radio Network. The debates are in, the debates are over. What do you think? You know, well, my opinion is like this, and I give it to you at this commercial break.
Wouldn't you just like to feel clean again? In Chicago and surrounding areas, Unique Towel Cleaning Service is the best cleaning service. We do basic cleaning and super cleaning, offices and apartment buildings. We will even clean your barber shop, your beauty shop, your spa or restaurant's towels and aprons. Call Unique Towel Cleaning Service at 773-484-5027. Ask us about our very special offer for our new clients. Call us at 773-484-5027 today and feel clean again.
Hello. This is Prentice L. Allison, founder and president of SPSI, Service Perfect Solutions Incorporated, a network of financial service professionals teaching people how to use life insurance and annuities to retain more of their income and pay the least tax on it. Our toll-free number is 877-902-9048. We are proud to have serviced more than 500 clients, national and international, from ages 0 to 99 for the past 30 years. My tip to you today is, if you are a business owner with at least one employee, including yourself, it would behoove you to get business life insurance. Why? Thank you for asking. 7 points I want to leave with you. Your premiums are tax deductible. Your policy bills cash tax deferred. Your cash reserve inside the policy is yours to use tax-free. The policy will replace your income if death occurred prematurely. The company will pay the premiums if you become disabled. The policy will return all premiums to you when you retire. Last but not least, make sure your agent is well experienced in business life insurance. Stay tuned for more tips on how to use life insurance and annuities to help yourself today and protect your family and business tomorrow. This is Prentice L. Allison, president of SPSI. Toll-free number is 877-902-9048. I wish you well, and to God be the glory.
Tired, stressed out, or just need me or we time? Then Phoenix Rising, Baltimore's exclusive bed and breakfast, is the place for you. Phoenix Rising offers an unforgettable, rejuvenating experience with exquisite guest rooms. Find peace and calm in the Sedona Room or Haitian Room, or relax in front of a marble fireplace in the Serengeti Room. Call 410-462-2692 today to schedule your escape to Phoenix Rising. Visit us online at phoenixrising.com.
Yeah, I'd like to thank y'all for tuning in to the presidential debate. Well, I look at it like this. Hearing all the pundits talk about it now, if you're in Romney camp, you're going to cheer. Oh, he said the private jets. Oh, he said the house. Good zinger. Oh, this is Solyndra. Oh. And if you're Obama, you're going to like, man, you say, well, Romney didn't answer the questions. He was dancing around just trying to just throw facts out, not coming up with a plan. What it did do was make for good television and provide the next debate with something more to watch. My opinion of the whole deal was that if Romney did good, then that would make the next debate easy to watch. I need a little bit more feedback because, you know, hey, yeah. Listening to it and watching it, because I was listening to it and watching it, you know, Romney sound good on some points and Obama sound good on some points, but watching it, Romney just didn't look comfortable. He looked too antsy. Maybe because I'm overreading things, I don't know. The Big Bird comment, he should, you know, I don't think coming out saying I'm going to kill PB, I'm going to stop funding the PBS, you know, I'm going to let you know off top. There's a lot of soccer moms and stuff that be on PBS, you know. And I don't think coming at the PBS, even though the monitor's from PBS, was, you know, such a wise thing, but he's a maverick, I guess they want us to call in. But like I said, it all depends what camp you're in, how you're going to take the debate, because really nothing was said. It's like bully pulpit to me. You know, you had Romney just not answering all the questions, and you just had Obama just taking up all the time. But it depends on what you see. 347-838-9825, y'all still out there. I might be on 30 minutes a little bit longer if I get a couple of callers in. If not, I'll pack it in at 10 each.
Make me realize.
347-838-9825, Jimmy's Underground Radio. Let me take this call right here. What's going on, 313? Who is this?
Shemesh, Sir Swift is Funk will work on deck, you know.
What's up,
what's
DJ Swift? What it do, what it do, what it do?
Yeah, man. I was been out of touch for a minute, but I'm back, you know. And you know, just wanted to kind of give a little synopsis about this here presidential debate thing. You know, it was interesting. You know, I think that Romney doesn't stand a chance. You know, and I'm not, you know, really all up into the political thing because I know what it is. But anyway, Romney didn't have a leg to stand on due to all of the allegations and things that has been proven to be things about what he said about the 47% of the Americans that he don't care nothing about, this, that, and the third. So he really kind of still trying to rebound. And for everything that he said previously, he has now flipped the script, you know, and he's really, I mean, just trying to gain voters at this point, gain more attention for himself so he can get in there and do the reversal of what he said tonight. Because before it was always, well, I'm going to raise taxes and I don't care nothing about the middle class and the poor and the third. But now he's saying, I'm not going to raise taxes. I'm trying to develop jobs and this, that, and that. Man, the guy is, he's pretty much finished, you know. And as far as Obama, you know, Obama was kind of like playing him kind of like how Tyson used to do before the fight. You know how they had a little staring contest and Tyson would never look you in the eye. You know, like, I ain't worried about this cat, man. Let me go ahead and verbally jab him up a couple of times. And then, you know, we're going to go ahead and walk on and I'm going to take this second term here. You know, simple and plain, the country is in a condition and has been in a condition to whereas we can stand no more of those Republican tactics. You know what I mean? Because if they do get in there, it's going to be a Bush part three, you know. And the only way that you're going to benefit from a cat like Romney is if you're in that same financial bracket. And I don't know too many cats that's in that financial bracket with Romney.
Right. Well, I agree with you, too. Watching it, you know, like I said, people from both camps are going to take what they want to take from it. You know,
indeed.
If you are in the Romney camp, you're going to like the zingers that he said. You're going to be happy that he didn't fall apart at the stand. If you're on the side of Obama, you're going to say, oh, man, this dude wiped the floor up with him. In the end, a lot of things were just tossed around and nothing was really said. It was
true.
A case of everybody just talking their time out, you know, and not giving answers.
Right.
Obama could have, you know, cut it short, and it's like, okay, Romney, what's your plan? End of discussion. No need to keep going on, i.e. Romney could have just said, Romney could have answered the question, put his plan out there. You know, both were just playing around and not really answering questions. Like I said, there was no winners and no losers out of it to me. Both people, depending on what camps you are in, you feel comfortable in the person you're supporting. But what this has done was made the ratings for the next debate more watchable because people want to see how would he handle himself part two, you know, in this.
Yeah.
And that's
plus
it.
They want to see him get dirty. They want to see him get dirty a little bit. I mean, that's just the nature of a human, you know what I mean? When you see two cats in a competition, you know, people want to see, you know, they want to see a couple of they want to see Romney say something to Obama or Obama say something to Romney, you know, and watch somebody get their feathers ruffled and what have you. But,
right.
That's
all going on today. But check this out, Swift. I'm going to take this quick break. But on this break, I got to play this clip from Jay Shine. Would you check it out? This is a collab. This is a Jimmy Lee Underground Radio collaboration from Jay Shine from Gulfport, Mississippi, Prophet Child Paul, and Hennessy from Miami, Florida. So check it out. I'm going to play it for you. Let me get down. I want your opinion on it. This is
for sure.
World premiere.
Four, three, two, one. I'm writing. I'm writing. I took the wheel, I mashed the gas, now I'm at top speed. Red lights, signs, and cop cars couldn't stop me. Fast forward to the money, and clock me in at my three. Needless to say, I'm one of them rap dudes you cannot see. So ride out with that bullshit, I'm Shy City, no bullshit. Took a ride down to the Sip, and Jay Shine put me in that pulpit. I ain't preaching, no, just riding, only with the real we coincide. And told me onto any stage, and the end result is electrifying. You can't play me like a violin, worth it all, man. So violent, striving for greatness, the road to the glory. No breaks in it till the end of my wheels keep spinning, I ain't gassed up, but my team, we winning. Top MCs just put me with them. Ride this beat, let it be my next victim. Killing it, bet you feeling it. Feeling it, something to ride through. Cold as survival, do the best you can, whatever you got. Make big shit happen, never had a lot. They can wish it to teach, but it ain't gonna stop. Motivating all my people, going get that guap. Ain't how much you get, it's really what you do with it. That's the business. The whip on the road to the digits, I'm in it. And shorty with me, loving every minute I'm riding.
Prophet Child Paul, that's that war for me. I'm riding. That was
Underground Collab. We're about to get back into the talk of this debate. I got Kent from, we can't call him from Ebony, from Fisk University, and I got DC Dan. Let me go back to Swift for a sec. Hold on, so let me bring the callers in while I got you on there. What's going on, Kent? What's your take over this debate that was just...
Well, I was just looking at MSNBC's analysis of it, and a couple of friends had texted in to me and saying that the news agency said that Romney had won this. But, you know, I really looked at that debate differently. And the reason is, you know, what they're acknowledging is that Romney basically went on the tack and set the agenda of the debate, talking over the moderator.
Right.
Yeah, and just basically asserting what he wanted to talk about, which, you know, I give him credit for the fact that that's what he needed to do. He really had no choice. He's down in all the polls of all the swing states, which means that he could not win the presidency without it. So he really did have to come out fighting. So he did as a candidate what he needed to do. Now, the interpretation is that Obama did not attack him, you know, back. But what I think, the way I interpret it is, Obama carried himself as not a candidate, but as the president of the United States. And basically every point that was handled, you know, he basically shrugged and responded in kind in a very measured tone. So it really depends how you want to really call the winner of the debate. I'm going to have to say is, what optics are you using? Are you using the optics of, well, who was the knockdown, drag-out person? That's one way of looking at it. If you want to look at it as who was the most truthful, well, the fact checkers will decide that, you know, tomorrow morning. If you want to look at it as who basically handled themselves well in the, you know, the debate, well, you know, I would say that would go to Obama. But so it really just depends on what were you looking for out of the debate to say who won it. But from what I'm seeing, most people just wanted a knockdown, drag out fight, and the presidency evidently didn't want to give it to him.
I agree with that. I'll bring you in a second, Dan. I agree with you. My overall opinion of it was okay, and I saw it. If you were in Romney camp, you was ecstatic because of the zingers. If you was in Obama camp, you was happy because you got points and facts across that Romney will have to address, even though you wanted to get his plan off. But what this debate, in my opinion, has done was made the next debate more anticipated to watch. You know, even Obama Obama talked over the moderator, and Romney never asked questions. My opinion, Obama could have kept it short and simple, to the facts, ended like that. He could have went Chicago on him. But I guess it's a marathon race, how he's trying to perceive it. Romney, you know, he was just, you know, he wants to kill Elmo, you know, and that's going to hurt a lot of voters off there in soccer mom. What do you think about it, Dana? I got you in live now, Dana. What do you think about the debate?
I thought it was an interesting debate. I'll tell you what I thought was the most interesting was that the candidate Romney, he totally went against everything that he has professed throughout this process. You know
right.
what I mean? It was like he kind of went back and adopted all of President Obama's ideas and then presented them as if they were his own. And then the ones that President Obama even pointed out, well, hey, that's my idea. He said, well, it was a little different.
So
it just showed that he's willing to say anything, and he really doesn't have a stance in this race.
Well,
you know what I mean?
Does it make the next debate more watchable? You got to tune in to see how they handle it. To me, it seems as if they were selling commercials. To me, it's as if it was part of a, we're just going to maintain. We're going to dance around a little bit. You know, it's a little marathon. We're just going to play it out. Like my man Swift was saying, they're like a boxing match. We're going to just fill each other out. We ain't going to really go round one, round two, round three. I'm going to see where you're coming from. Now, Obama knows where Romney's coming from. And Romney
right.
kind of got a feel of Obama. It's going to be, in my opinion, now they got a feel for each other, what's round two going to be about. You know what I'm saying, Swift?
For sure, Obama kind of Floyd Mayweather, you know, Romney, you know what I mean? Kind of let him, you know, just kind of figured him out, seeing where he was at, and then he just went on ahead and did and went for the kill. You know,
you feel that Obama lost the debate?
Speaking for what he already did.
Swift. Do you feel that Obama lost the in your mind, if like my man from Kent said from Fisk University said that people was MSNBC and other moderators and pundits are now saying that Romney won this debate. Do you feel that Obama lost this debate, or Romney won it, in your opinion?
No, I don't think he lost at all. And like the other guy said, and I agree with him, that Romney came in very aggressive, which is what he had to do because he has to prove himself, and he has to basically gain more support for all of that stuff that he talked before this debate. And now that he got here on tonight and switched everything that he said previously, because I'm quite sure that he knows that he lost a lot of supporters from the stuff that he said before, and he may lose more tonight because he reneged on what he said previously.
Like the regulators, and I'm not going to cut education, and a lot of stuff that, yeah, and about, like what got me was interesting. See, everybody, see, people, I watch the debate very differently. You know, first of all, I'm Republican, so I'm watching it with both eyes, but
right.
What Romney, to me, had a problem with was the Obamacare, because when the question was asked, what would you do with it, he just said, well, I will work with the Congress because I had a Democratic Congress. He did a lot of shadow boxing,
and it's
going to be very interesting to see how the next moderator handles this, because Jim Lehrer looked like he needed his blood pressure checked at the end of that show. What do you think about that?
Out of control. You know what else I thought was interesting, Jimmy, that I don't know if anyone else picked up on? You know, I hate to talk about people cheating when it comes to certain things, but it seemed like when President Obama was speaking, if you watch the debates and you watch Mitt Romney, he appeared to be reading.
Well, they both had little cue cards, and they know they want to have, so they won't be on point. Kent, so from what you've seen, like you said, Romney had to come out aggressive, and he did. You know, to me, I didn't see aggression. I saw a man as if he was talking to donors, as if he was saying more donor points, but If the media wants the red meat and the dynamites and the hey-hey-heys, then he gave that to them. Go ahead.
Well, the point that I was going to make is you make an excellent point. He really put himself in a problem. Forgive me, I didn't remember your name, but the young lady that you have on your show had pointed out, he has had to basically go back on everything that he was talking about prior to this debate. And now that he's, you know, opened up that door, he has to go back to his base, the ones that he's going to need debate dollar, you know, campaign money from, and say, well, okay, I want to do this and this. Well, wait a minute, that's not what you said during that debate. So he really opened up a conundrum for him. If you take some time to just calm down and get over the fact that Romney was aggressive and, you know, but I love the analogy about boxing. Because if you use the analogy of boxing, yeah, Romney came out swinging, I have no doubt. But if you also use the same analogy, Obama deflected a great deal of his punches and calculatedly threw punches of his own that hit in opposed
right.
to this. I will also make one point. Romney did get one good hit in. When he went after the billions of dollars that was put into green energy, based from companies that failed, that was the point that the president didn't counter on. So I'll give him that, but I would also say that he threw a lot of other points that Obama basically blocked off, and then when the time came, Obama made a point and stuck him, and he couldn't shrug it off.
You see, this is what Robert reminded me of. I'm not trying to speak ill of him because you got two more debates to go and see how that plays itself out. You see, I feel that he's going to use the Solyndra all over again. You know, I don't know how many of y'all probably played the dozens in your life or probably had somebody that knew that one thing about you and rolled it on, even though the joke is out, played out, dated, he's still coming on. Yeah, man, but what about Solyndra? Yeah, man, what about Solyndra? He even ended, the debate with Solyndra again. I'll remind everybody else about Solyndra. You gave money. See, the flip side about what Romney's argument was, okay, I gave money to green energy. Yeah, it didn't fail, but I'm trying to use green energy to get us off this foreign oil who we're giving subsidies to. I I mean, if you want to look between the middle lines, it's like if you're part of the, I would say 85%, but I'm going to drop it down though. If you're part of the 65% of people of America who just get their news off the MSNBC and the CNNs and don't go through the hard paper copy things, you know, it'd be difficult to read between the lines. Like, to me, nah, I didn't see Romney winning, and you know, I was trying to be neutral in my discussion of it, because I said no matter what camp you went to, you would take on the Romney side or the Obama side. I'm in neither. You know, for personally, you know, Black Americans are bad, and it's a bomb economy. I'd be first to say that. But given how Romney, to me, this is what Romney's doing to me. He's trying to channel Ronald Reagan. His mannerism, the way he hold his head, the way he shake back and forth, he's really trying. Man, who are you imitating? You're not being yourself, you know. And one thing that I got from watching the debate, like I said, first I was listening to it, it reminded me of what the historian said about the Kennedy-Nixon debate. Because if you looked at the debate, compared and contrast, Romney looked like he was under enormous stress and pressure. For them to say that Romney won it, they must have went on strictly oratorically skills, because watching it, maybe, excuse me, right, reading the transcripts, because watching it, he looked at dazed and confused. He looked at like, okay, I'm just going to get these quick points in. I'm not going to pay attention to you, Jim Lehrer. I'm not going to even ask you the question. Matter of fact, you asked me a question, and I'm going to say something that these points I'm trying to get in, you know. But he made to me, I don't know if he's trying to be big balls or not, but the fact that he told Jim Lehrer, I'm cutting PBS.
That was a dumb move. I thought that was the stupidest comment.
Do you know, it was funny, I was looking on Facebook and a lot of people making posts, and they were like, cut Big Bird. Oh, my gosh. You got to
know. Yeah.
Devil.
Well, I wouldn't say cut Big Bird. You're trying to get rid of Elmo. Big Bird is played out. You know, all Obama got to do is stand. Man, Romney wanted to get rid of Elmo, and every little kid in America will tell their parents to vote for Obama tomorrow. Kids don't know who Big Bird is. You say you give it to Elmo, it'd be a fit. People love Elmo's World. If you got some kids and you ain't put them in front of Channel 11 or your PBS station to watch Elmo's World or Supergirl or Word Girl or Dr. Superman, you know, it's just that.
Well,
it's funny with all the bullshit on TV, you know, with all the bullshit that's on TV, with all the sex, betrayal, and evil debauchery, you're going to pick the one positive station that public broadcast that provides at least a way of educating the masses, you'll cut that off. I think that was the only downfall that will hurt tomorrow. See, today you might say you won the debate, but tomorrow.
If you would allow me, there was an interesting thing about that, because I made a particular note of this. The whole thing about PBS came up from when the candidate Romney had said, okay, here's how I'm going to decide whether what programs to cut. I will give it a test, and I will test if this program is worth borrowing more money from China. Now, if you go five sentences beyond that, he goes and says, I don't believe anything is worth borrowing money from China. So essentially what he said was, at first he was trying to say, well, I'm going to give it a reasonable consideration, but then jumped around and simply says, the very standard that I'm using, I've already determined that nothing is worth borrowing money from China. Now, I'm not suggesting that borrowing money from China is appropriate, but what I'm saying is that he already said, well, if his test is borrowing money from China and nothing is worth it, then basically any program, entitlement or not, is on the table for being cut. And I really hope the American people watch that, because that basically means he could go after anything, anywhere from student loans to Title III to anything.
Well, here's
and I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I said here's something.
I was
go ahead. No, here's something I found interesting also. That Romney has said that. No, go ahead, Dana. I got another call.
And I also noticed that he used one of the points that President Clinton used at the Democratic convention, right? He talked about the trickle down. Again, that was not his adopt. That was something else that he adopted from the Democrats. But most importantly, was that he promoted business. And he tried to say, he tried to remove all of these federal regulations and then give the state free reign when we already know that states don't always do the responsible thing.
Well, here's something that I saw Obama. He said, you know, here's a jab that Obama got in. I wonder if people peep this jab out when he said, you're going to change Medicare. No, not for the senior citizens that are involved in it. We're talking about the future people. And then Obama came back and said, yeah, well, if you're 55 years old, you want to hear this. Now, that was something that a lot of people have not been discussing when you talk about the Social Security and Medicare Reform Act. They're looking at people in their 30s and their 20s. They're not quite looking at people that are 55. You know, they're not looking at those people. They're looking at individuals that make less money than average. Another poem said, he said there's 47 million people on food stamps now. Now, I wonder, is he stuck on his 47 number because he says 47% of people are going to vote for Obama. There's 47 million people on welfare. 47 people on welfare, not to be front with you, going to want their welfare, and they're going to vote for Obama to keep their welfare on. It's funny how not doing it, but doing it, he was really drawing a line in the sand with the rich. See, a lot of people, I can't go on this quick, what I mean quick, just quick breakdown of who winners and losers. You know, because right now, even the pundits, even the people out here on the radio talking about it in the news, you know, like I said, depending on what camp you're in, you're hearing both people go back and forth. But if everyone takes another time and listen to it again, you're going to see something totally different. And probably what I guess each one of you all saw. What were you saying, Swift?
Oh, no, I was saying check your page for the PBS picture. Just to get real good from there.
Yeah, for the bigger. Yeah, but we're going there again, Dan. I'm sorry. I got about 14 minutes.
I just feel like he continued to promote the things that the same things he was saying, but he said them in a different way. And so it kind of looked like he was really in support of all Americans, when in fact he was really promoting big business.
Yeah. Go ahead, Kent.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you really pull back and peel the layers of the onion back, at the end of the day, you're right. It is all about big business. And I don't think
the whole comment about, you know, him saying when he made the speech the donors about 47%. Now, this is interesting because actually I had actually looked up that statistic. And him saying 47 million people are on, you know, I looked it up and the Department of Agriculture stated that it was 42.3 or 43.2 million Americans that are on some form of government assistance, be it food stamps or what have you.
And 37% of them are European Americans, white. Only 23%
of
African Americans on food stamps. 37% of white Americans on food stamps.
Yeah. See, that's,
you don't realize that.
When they make those statements, what they're really talking is an implicit code because of a stereotype. That means minority, which is pretty much the stereotype that many white Americans in rural areas think of when they think of entitlement programs.
Can I make a difference with that now, because those people in rural Americas, they are on food stamps now, too.
Well,
they
agree with you.
Now,
see,
too.
Go ahead. But again, that is the perception that even though you might have that one person in rural America on food stamps, they would still think, yeah, but the majority of us on food stamps are still not people that look like me.
But think about this. I bet they would not vote for the candidate that said they're going to take their food stamps away. You see, this is where white America, white Republicans are tripping on Obama and calling him the food stamp president, because a lot of white Americans are on food stamps now. And they know this, that once you are in the government straw, you ain't getting off. They ain't getting off. You know, they're going to ride that until they can't ride it no more. I mean, that's what food stamps do for you. Once you get food stamps, you don't want to let it go.
Jimmy, they didn't get more food stamps because of President Obama. The misconception and the misperception that has been promoted and projected on TVs and through the media is that the people, the food stamp recipients, are all these minorities who are homeless or the ones that's not homeless. Then they're just bringing other people to their house. You know, that's a misperception. Minorities have never been the majority of the food stamp recipients.
But Dana, the numbers don't lie. See, this has killed me. A lot of blacks got mad at Reagan for saying he dissed African Americans by calling them welfare queens. Even at the time of Ronald Reagan, whites on food stamps than blacks. You see, blacks looked at that, to me, it's like somebody walked in the room and said, "Dag, somebody farted." And everybody in the room said, "It ain't me." I mean, goddamn, you know what I'm saying? What I'm saying is that instead of black people, in my opinion, 10 minutes, I got to try to wrap it up real quick. Black people seem to take every little thing that people say about them. When you look at the numbers, he can't be talking about me. You know, instead of saying, "Nah, this nigga ain't talking about me," it's more y'all on it than I am. Like I'm saying now, talk about food, talk about disability, talk about welfare, and more white Americans are on it than black Americans. Why? Because Bill Clinton made sure blacks got off the rolls a long time ago. But that's another day.
And because all of these programs that are supposedly being overutilized by us are not being utilized by us because we can't figure out how to get them.
Let me tell you why they're not being utilized. They're not being utilized by us because I hate to go liberal now, because liberals have junked everybody in with black minorities. Right now, homosexuals got more rights than black minorities. They're the new minority, so they get more rights. White women got more rights. Hispanics got more rights. In America, the civil rights laws are put in place to help repair the damages that a country has done to a race of people. No white women, no homosexuals, no Mexicans have a claim to civil rights when no country has came to suppress them. So that's why I'm coming with that, but that's for another day. Let me ask my man Kent one quick little hookup. What do you think about the Mars rover mission? Do you think we're going to find life on Mars, homie?
I don't think that the issue is that we're going to find life on Mars. What we think the issue is that we will find evidence that there was life on Mars. And what I mean by that is, in order for you to have some sort of carbon-based organism, which we pretty much think is essential to have life, you have to have water. And we pretty much find that there is no liquid water on Mars. But I think actually we've discovered that there is ice, like liquid water ice, under the surface of the dirt. And one of our rovers have actually seen that. Now, what we would hope to find is if we can find this, you know, clear evidence of water, then in the region, which we have actually, we can tell erosion that is on Mars because it resembles the erosion that looks, say, in the Grand Canyon. There was water on Mars at one time. But I would go to say that it's not so much that I think we'll find life. I think that we're looking for evidence of life. And I think that that's very well possible.
I dropped that in there because I'm trying to drop a little quick PSA because tomorrow's New Music Thursday. But I want to have you on. I'm going to try to get you on for a minute to talk about that Mars lunar landing and what you think we're going to find or will we find that life started on Mars and came to Earth, all that type of stuff. If you're not busy Monday, I want to have you on. Matter of fact, Monday evening, I want to have you on.
Hey, can I get in there with you real quick on that?
Go on in, Swift.
Okay. Now, the thing about the whole Mars thing is that there is a lot of deceiving statements and so forth that's been talked about with this Mars thing. Reason being is because they keep saying that, is there life on Mars? Can there be life on Mars? Was there ever life on Mars? They got this rover out there, you know, okay, yeah. But what I'm saying is they keep saying that could it be life on Mars based on what they know about human survival here on this planet. Now, according to the information that they've gotten so far about what they know about Mars, there is no way that a human being from Earth could survive on Mars in temperatures that, you know, are like 81 degrees above zero and go down to 81 degrees below zero. There's no way that a human being from Earth could survive there, but who's to say that there is life there? That who is indigenous to the planet and is that environment is suitable for their living? You know what I'm saying?
Don't even go there. I got 5 minutes. Man, I ain't got too long to talk about it. I want you to hold that for Monday. Let me just call in Monday with that question. What's up, King? Can I get you on Monday to talk about this life on Mars and rover planet? I've been wanting to have you on since we landed on Mars. I just got caught up in the show.
I understand. Word. I think I can swing this time on Monday. Yes.
All right, I appreciate that. Yo, Dana, what you want to get? Say, I got a little 5 minutes. I'm going to get you a little last minute shout out so I can fade out of here.
Hi, you know, I called in earlier, and then I was trying to listen to the debate, and I was listening to you play the debate, and I figured I'd call back and talk to you about it later on. I think it was very interesting. I feel it's so important that President Obama comes out. And, you know, he stops just taking the jabs and starts putting them out there. There were so many points that he could have come back on, so many points and so many things that he could have said. It's going to be an interesting one. I can't wait to see how this goes.
Neither can I. I'm waiting to see how the things turned out. Again, everybody, this is Jimmy's Underground Radio. I'm going to end it like good night. May your God be with you like always. Tomorrow, New Music Thursday, it's Occupy Hip Hop. We got a live little group coming in here from Chi-Town. They got a little mixtape dropping out. Check this out on that. Don't forget to get Ride With Me, that new world premiere by Jay Shine, other cats. Yo, Swift, you going to homecoming?
All right, man, you know what? I don't know, man. I might have to do the last-minute thing. I was going to go, but my engine just blew in my vehicle, so I'm out here looking for a new whip. I think I located it now. I'm just trying to wait for everything to transpire so we can go ahead and make it happen.
Well, if not, man, well, shit, tune in tomorrow, New Music Thursday. If not, cause I'm leaving right after the show and heading down to CSU. We'll be broadcasting live. Don't forget, you down there in Xenia, hit the tape yard. They're going to be broadcasting live from Dayton. You got Mac Daddy Ross Party. I'll definitely be down there Friday. Hey, thank you, Dana, for calling in again. Kent, I want you on Monday. You know my space technology out there from Fisk University represents, right? I'd like to thank y'all for being on my show. This is Jimmy's Underground Radio. Good night. May your God be with you.
Good night. Baby, here I am. Take me just as I am. I'm
Swift, for God, for Central State, and may your God be with you. Adi.